Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Brownlee. I am joined tonight for our 13th high school reunion.
Hey Patrick, how you doing?
By Tara Reid.
Hey everyone. Nice to see you.
It's Tara Reid, or is it Breckenmeyer doing Lindsay Lohan? They're one and the same. That's Doug, everyone, doing a Tara Reid impression.
Patrick, thank you for having me
Show. Thank you for coming to my American reunion.
Well, I was 50-50 at first if I was going to come, but I figured, well, I better show off the new wife.
Yeah.
And make my ex-girlfriends jealous.
We're talking about American reunion tonight, which we will do spoiler-free for a good part of the episode, and then in case you haven't seen it yet, we will go into spoilers and we will give you plenty of advanced warning so you can tune out before we start breaking down the specifics, the nuances, if you will, of American Reunion, because it is a movie that is worth examining, let's face it.
You think so?
No. We did a podcast over a year ago, I guess, on the original American Pie with our friend Jason. And we were hoping he could join us for the American Reunion podcast. Sadly, he was not able to have an American Reunion with us. So we will talk about the movie in his stead. But you can find us at fthismovie.blogspot.com, where you can find all... I just said all in a weird way. All of our past episodes, because now, you know, if you go into iTunes and search F This Movie, you'll find our show, and you can leave a really nice review for us there.
In fact, I would encourage everyone out there right now, if you haven't, and those of you who have, Sarah DeLallo, thank you very much. If you haven't already left a review, please do so.
Yeah.
Bump us up. Make us popular. We want to keep doing this.
Yeah, we do.
We want to keep feeling good about it, too.
You can find, like, 100 of our most recent episodes.
And that's just iTunes thing. That's 100. Yeah, they get up every show.
So if you want to find all of our shows, you have to go to fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, where you can join the conversation.
Oh.
I'm just saying that because I see that at a lot of, like,
the
end of movie trailers or, like, places where it's like, join the conversation.
In our timeline. Sorry about the timeline, everyone.
Yeah, Facebook, that's not our fault. I would never have switched to timeline. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. You can email us, as always, at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And if you're listening to us through DVD Verdict, hello, thank you. We're available at dvdverdictpresents.com. Thank you to Michael Staley and everyone at DVD Verdict for hosting our show. Every Thursday, I believe, we run on DVD Verdict.
Thursdays?
Yeah.
That's must-see TV
Our
nights.
Our show typically posts on Wednesdays.
We have to compete with Cheers and Seinfeld?
We are competing with Jesse and Veronica's Closet.
And The Cosby Show and The Single Guy.
A Different World and...
Joey?
Night Court and Joey.
I'd hope to be moved to Friday so we can compete with TGIF.
Yeah, Full House, Family Matters, Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
Step by Step.
I think you've said them all.
The one with Alan Ruck and Heather Locklear.
Step by Step, day by day. I have this song.
I don't think I ever saw that show.
It was on syndication on like WGN in Chicago for the longest time, and the theme song sucked me in. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the theme song, it's something like, they do this like thing where they go like, the deeper they climb, the hotter they fall. It's like these minor notes, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
It tells you that the show's going to be super edgy.
Suzanne Summers shows her face, and I'm like, nope, thanks. We're shouting right now. Sorry about that.
Listen, we're all jazzed up on American Reunion. Doug, before we talk about American Reunion, have you seen anything good lately?
You know, it's been such a short period of time since our last podcast that... I have not, but I want to talk about something that we did not talk about at the end of the last podcast. It was the Free Association podcast in which we talked about anything and everything.
Yeah, we did.
And hopefully you guys enjoyed that. But at the end, part of the reason we did that was because Hunger Games had come out about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, no. At that point, it was like just over a week, I think.
Right, but now it's 2 weeks.
It's going on its third week, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this is Wednesday, so two and a half weeks.
Right.
And we did not do a podcast on that. We had wanted to, but just it didn't work out. So we said, oh, let's just talk about everything. We'll talk about Hunger Games. So I'm going to talk about Hunger Games right now.
Yeah, you might as well. Sorry, we're a couple weeks late, everybody. But, you know, you haven't heard us weigh in on it yet.
R.E. Hunger Games. I liked it.
All right.
And that's my wrap-up on Hunger Games.
Wow, thank you. Now, did you hear that Gary Ross, director of Hunger Games, will not be returning to direct Catching Fire, the sequel to Hunger Games.
I did hear that Gary Marshall is taking a break from Exit to Eden 2.
That is fantastic. And he might be directing Hunger Games?
Catching Fire.
That is going to be a really interesting movie.
Katniss. I can't even do my dumb Gary Marshall impersonation.
I can't. I just want to do Paul F. Tompkins' impression of Gary Marshall. But I can't even do that.
I didn't hear that. So what's up for real?
You know, originally it was like he was holding out for money, but now it seems like, no, maybe he just doesn't want to be sort of tied down to doing more Hunger Games movies. Like,
you know, and that could be good because obviously, you know, another recent book adaptation movie, Harry Potter, it benefited really well.
I thought you were going to say Twilight? Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the Lightning Thief.
I'm not going to say that.
I thought for sure you were going to say The Seeker, The Dark is Rising.
I'm waiting for the R.L. Stine Goosebumps movie.
I thought for sure you were going to say I Am Number 4.
I think that Harry Potter benefited from having different directors. I know there's a couple directors that do a couple, the last two movies are the same director, David Yates, I think.
Four, actually.
Oh, wow.
Well, okay. If you count, I guess it's three, technically, if you count one movie.
Well, I don't. It's two movies.
All right, then he did the last four.
But I think it benefited a great deal from having different directors, different visions. I mean, they each brought something different to the table. So yeah. I just hope they don't go. I think they have to realize that what they did was something special. It's above and beyond better than Twilight. It's better than so much other teen pap out there that they have to go that kind of darker, especially because I think the books, you haven't read the second and third books.
No.
I have, because I'm a bookworm. I was going to say book nerd.
That's a thing, a book nerd. It's a little bit redundant. It's just nerd.
I hope that they go darker. And not to say darker to be darker, but the book is kind of darker. You know, and I think that it would benefit from not being
What's darker bopper. Than kids murdering other kids?
Kids murdering babies.
Oh my gosh.
I just spoiled the ending of Catching Fire. They murder so many babies. Like Game of Thrones.
What?
Did you see like that scene?
What? Sorry everyone, spoilers for Game of Thrones.
Oh, fuck it.
What?
It's off camera, but still, this isn't cool. I don't want to see this. Joffrey, what a bastard kid.
Oh, nothing they do to that kid will satisfy me.
Right?
I swear to God, they could think of the meanest possible way to kill that kid, and I still will be like, no! Resurrect him and do it again.
They're going to pour gold over his head.
Oh, that's not enough.
After it's been cut from his body and dragged behind a semi, which
too
hasn't
fast.
Been invented in what was it, Panem?
Somebody get to work on inventing the semi. My concern is, like, I think Gary Ross is a good director. I mean, he hasn't made that many movies.
Right.
He did Pleasantville, which I really like. And he made Seabiscuit, which, like, hey, that's as good as a horse racing movie as I'm probably going to see. So he hasn't made a ton of movies. But I think he did some things with Hunger Games that were smart. And when you first heard him as announced as the director, that wasn't the obvious choice,
right.
I don't think.
No, absolutely
and
not.
So I think he kind of emphasized a side of that story that another director would not have. Another director would have turned it into sort of an action movie about kids killing kids. And I don't think Gary Ross did that. So my concern is that the next director that they hire, I hope, is able to find things in Catching Fire that aren't sort of on the surface, you know, just to make a super entertaining, like,
I hope so. Now that you put it that way, actually, I think it's going to be more about just an action movie. Because the first book is a lot more just setting the tone and obviously establishing the characters and establishing the scenery.
Right.
And the second book doesn't have to do that, so it just jumps right in. So there's just a lot more of that.
Right. And the thing we always said about Harry Potter, in terms of like Chris Columbus, people criticize, you know, for just doing a very literal adaptation of the book. My defense was always, but think of all the groundwork he laid by setting up sort of the way that Hogwarts looks in the movie, but especially in casting all of the parts, in particular the three leads. And
people should listen to our two podcasts on the last two Harry Potter movies, I think.
Yes, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, and Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, what was it called?
I think just Part 1.
Okay. Gary Ross, I can't necessarily give that same credit to, because he did cast Jennifer Lawrence. Great job.
No, she's definitely too fat for that part.
Oh, right? She's running around the woods, and I'm like,
can we clear something up right now?
Stop breaking all those sticks and leaves, Tubby.
Can we clear up something right now?
Let's.
Fuck the internet and every website out there that, like, only serves. And I'm obviously, I've been very, how do I put this? There's been yes and no. There's obviously been podcasts in the past where I've been very focused on boobs and chicks.
Keep listening
and
to
girls.
The American Reunion podcast.
Well, right, obviously. But there's obviously podcasts in the past where I've talked about these things, and I might come across to some as kind of like, oh, he's just a dude. And
you're playing a character.
But, you know, part of it is just me making jokes and being funny. But if right. I am nothing, and I swear to God I'm not being sarcastic or tongue-in-cheek right now, I'm a feminist or an equalist, and it's I'm so sick of these websites, and I visit a lot of different gossip just to kind of populate our Twitter feed from news and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And half of the shit that they post is like just pictures of all the lead actresses at different premieres.
Yeah.
And there was two things that struck me. One was that they people calling Jennifer Lawrence too heavy. And by the way, I'm not defending anything about her because you don't need to because she's
right.
a human being.
Right.
But she's not. She's actually, I think, almost kind of too skinny.
Right.
But that's also fine. Like,
right.
that's not my place to say anything.
Right.
She has a rounder face, and maybe that's what they looked at. But I think she's the most adorable thing ever. But they said she's too heavy to play. And I get maybe there's a kernel of logic behind this argument, but it's so fucking misplaced in calling out a real person's body image.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I saw another post, kind of a tangent to this point, where she was at a premiere, I believe in Spain, where she was kind of dressed down, and she looked adorable. She was super cute, way less makeup, hair up in like a ponytail, not like a sexy top. And I saw this one website where it's just like, oh, look at how homely she is when she doesn't have a team of artists. And I'm like, fuck you. Like, that, again, it's all about looks, and looks don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but
right.
why is it so important that you have to like build her up when she's wearing the hot green dress with the boobs hanging out and then tear her down when she's...
Because the internet is an awful place of yeah. anonymous snark, and the people writing these things are people that could never even approach a girl like Jennifer Lawrence, or any girl for that matter. And, you know, we wonder why girls have like crazy self-esteem issues. It's like because there's assholes on the internet criticizing...
Right.
Even the most beautiful, the women who are paid to be beautiful.
Like, and they're safe in their basements of their parents' house,
right.
smoking a bong and just writing,
right.
and like pulling images and
right.
masturbating, I
right.
assume, four times
drawing
a day.
Dicks on people. And it's
right.
like, hey, isn't it funny? Like, no, you're a shithead.
And the other comment I saw about the casting of Hunger Games was that how dare little, what's her name?
Rue.
Rue is black.
Yeah.
And Thresh, I forgot his name too.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The other one from District 11.
Yeah.
That they're African-American. Or
right.
Or African Panam. Panamanian. They're Panamanian. And it's just like, what? The girl's adorable. What? It's like a kid. It's just like people are racist and the worst. And this movie has brought out the worst in everyone.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's get back to the fact that it's a decent book. It's a young adult book that's not Shakespeare. I wouldn't even compare it to the level of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But it's so far beyond Twilight.
Okay.
And the movie... is really like it's a lot of it's interesting and fun. Parts are fun, parts are really sad, parts are gruesome. You had an issue with one of the saddest scenes though, or
I thought it was kind of the worst scene in the movie because they didn't earn that.
Spoilers for
moment.
Hunger Games.
One of the kids dies, and it's supposed to be the most meaningful death in the movie, but I think it's botched by a lot of things, including, and I hate to say it, the fact that the character is black. No, the performance the performance of the little girl.
I agree. I think it is saved in part a little bit by Jennifer Lawrence's
She's
unbelievable
good.
Acting.
Yeah,
she's so
good. What I was going to say about Gary Ross, like, good job casting Jennifer Lawrence, but I think he cast some of the other parts not as well.
Yeah, the
you know,
boys
Liam
in the movie.
Not Thor, Liam Hemsworth.
Hemsworth.
Who will just, for the rest of his life, be not Chris Hemsworth, because that is the guy that got all of the charisma in the Hemsworth family.
There's an interesting...
I love Chris Hemsworth, and...
I love him as the father of Kirk. there's an interesting
George,
thing...
that's a terrible name.
With, that whole... He's Australian, too. He's like, no,
oh,
that's horrible.
He's like, oi, I'm not going to name him Ty Berius.
I'll name him Chazwaga. There's an interesting phenomenon with a lot of young actors, and I think it so shows in Twilight, the way they act, how they say lines, how Taylor Lautner delivers any piece of dialogue, how, what's her name, Kristen Stewart responds.
Yeah.
And Jennifer Lawrence transcends that. She is so much better.
Yeah.
But the two male actors in Hunger Games, even Peeta, who actually has some really good scenes,
yeah.
but then there's a scene right on the tail, like, right in between those good scenes where he's just like, acting. I'm acting like this, and I'm using this voice. And everything Gale says is like, no, you should go fight Katniss. And it's like, oh, my God.
I'm fascinated by the reaction to the movie, because there are people that really like it.
I really like it.
And then there are people that really thought it was horrible. And I don't... I almost subscribe to neither. I mean, I liked it. I haven't thought about it that much since I saw it, honestly. And I have to believe... I mean, part of the problem was I read the book... like the week I saw the movie, sort of in preparation, because we were originally planning to do a podcast, and I was so sick of, like, when we would do a movie based on a book, I'd always be like, oh, I've never read the book. Right. I didn't want to be that guy again, so I read Hunger Games, to the detriment of the movie, because I had just read it, and so I'm just sitting there, like, checking off, like, that's the same, that's different, that's the same.
Well, you're almost waiting because you know what's going to happen, too, so it's like, okay, we still have another 40 minutes until
it just felt like a very sort of literal translation. And I do think that there are things in the movie that might not work, but I'm not aware because I have read the book and I'm filling in a lot of what's not on screen.
It definitely is a movie made for those fans of the books.
Right. Like,
but I do think it works for those
non-fans. There's moments that I'm giving a pass to where I think if I hadn't read the book, I wouldn't. You know what I mean?
One nitpicky thing I'll say, at one point, Peeta paints his face.
Oh, geez.
He's injured in the arena.
Yeah.
And he has to hide. So there's an earlier scene where he makes some jokey business about how he's a cake decorator in his previous life. And so he's injured and he has to hide. So he paints his face in such an immaculate way.
Yeah,
it is laughable. Yeah, it is like, again, I don't want to be sucked out and I don't want to necessarily nitpick a movie I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But this, it sucks. I was so sucked out. All of a sudden felt like a tree person from a...
Like one of those crystal trees from Lord of the Rings or whatever, like the big walking.
And it's like you're injured and you don't have a mirror and you're painting your face with like the grain of the wood that you're hiding near.
And it's one of those things that works better in a book because...
You should just smear his face like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator, like so that the Predator can't see his heat signature.
And be like, I'm here!
Right!
Do it! Kill me! You are one ugly motherfucker. That's actually from, like, part two.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Which doesn't make any goddamn sense, because the Predator in part two is not the one from part one, so how does he know what Schwarzenegger said to the Predator from part one?
Do you follow me? Spoilers for Predator.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he has a little wristwatch that blows up the forest.
Yeah, it's not the same Predator.
I realize I've seen Predator, like, that was one of the rentals we got as kids.
Oh, my God, Predator is great. My dad took me to see Predator like in a theater in 1987, and I will always appreciate that. And then we recorded it on it used to be called Viewer's Choice. It's pay per view now, but it used to be called Viewer's Choice. And on Saturday mornings, for some reason, we would get like free previews, not of movies. They literally just showed the trailers of the movies that were showing on Viewer's Choice, and I would wake up at 5 a.m. just to watch the trailers over and over again. My mom let me order Predator on Viewer's Choice. I taped it on my VHS tape, and I wouldn't always watch the whole thing. Sometimes I was in the mood to just watch like the action part, so I'd watch the first 40 minutes before the Predator shows up, when it's just them fucking steamrolling through the village and shooting everyone. Yeah. Stick around.
I've known you for a long time.
True.
When you say these things about you'd wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning as a kid to watch previews for movies that you weren't going to watch.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of me is like, well, that makes perfect sense to the person you are today, and part of me is just like, I don't know anything about you.
Do you want to call this quits? Do you want to?
I think you know what.
Do you want to wait till after our reunion?
18. Yes. Okay. Let's wait.
All right. To the next step.
Because I'm going
to
drink a little bit and probably say a couple things I shouldn't say at the reunion.
Let's talk about American Reunion. Enough about Hunger Games.
Hunger Games is good. You should check it out. I'm sure a lot of you have.
I'm pretty sure everybody has. That movie's made crazy money. All right. So American Reunion.
This was a better idea in theory.
Because I literally don't know where to start. Here's the thing. If you haven't heard our American Pie podcast, it would be great if you went and listened to that first. Because I think we have a lot of things to say about American Pie that may inform our discussion of American Reunion. Namely, we saw American Pie in 99. We were younger. We were closer to high school where the movie took place. But I don't think that's necessarily why we liked it. I think we liked the sincerity of the characters, and the fact that it had all this ridiculous, stupid humor, but was sincere and sweet in parts.
Yeah.
Namely, the Chris Klein, Mina Suvari relationship, and some of the Jason Biggs stuff.
The last podcast, I mentioned how I liked a movie, but I acknowledged that it's flawed. Mm-hmm. And you said we have to get rid of this notion when we talk about movies and say we like something, we don't.
Have to I, don't, say it's I, don't we, I don't think we have to say we can't say a movie. This movie's flawed. I think we just have to get away from saying it's not a perfect movie because no movie's perfect.
I see what you're saying. An American
Pie. What I'm saying is you're wrong,
and I agree.
I want to talk more about this.
the original American Pie, I think, is very flawed.
Yeah, of course.
And there's scenes. I mean, I think the last time I watched it was before the podcast, and there's scenes that so don't work, and there's scenes that are awkward, but it is so overwhelmed by the goodwill of the characters and the directors and the creators, and they're trying to do something a little slightly different. It's the old trope of the teen movie, but they're doing something a little different. And how far away they've gotten from every subsequent movie. It pretty much was a
There's
cliff.
A little bit of it in 2. I think some of the Biggs, Allison Hannigan stuff in 2 works. Okay. Some of it. Not all of it. But I think that, to me, is the only stuff that redeemed part 2. And then there's nothing in 3, and then it's...
I think Stifler has some funny moments in 2 also.
Okay. Maybe.
But I don't remember what they are right now for the podcast audience.
I don't either. So, here's American Reunion, a movie that no one's asking for, with the exception of the cast of American Reunion, because they need the work.
It's amazing, and back in 1999, you have to think that these characters, I think there's, how many are there?
600, apparently?
There's a ton of
And they
characters.
All have to be serviced
They all
in
have
this
A
movie.
Plots. Right. Yeah, there's no B plots, except for Natasha Lyonne, who shows up at the end with her lesbian...
Spoilers.
Oh, fuck. Who cares? Whatever. She's in one tiny scene that lasts 30 seconds.
We'll get into spoilers later. We'll try not to spoil them.
But everyone has an A plot, and you had to think in 99, these are all actors who are going to blow up and become famous, and I think one of them...
It seemed like the start of Allison Hannigan, kind of.
I'm arguing Sean William Scott.
Yeah, he has. He absolutely has. But, I mean, Allison Hannigan landed on How I Met Your Mother, and she's kept it going.
But I also think Allison Hannigan wasn't in the same starting point in terms of, like, a Jason Biggs.
True. She wasn't in, like, a new face.
Yeah, a lot of the characters were a new face, and she was the girl from Buffy and was kind of, like, and also kind of a tertiary character. Until the way end. Yeah, she was kind of like, you know, it was the core group of guys, the four guys.
And I was wondering that, watching American Reunion.
Yeah.
Because even Stifler really wasn't, he was sort of a secondary character in the original movie.
Right, he didn't have an A-plot that needed to be wrapped up that would take another...
And that's part of the problem, too, is watching American Reunion, I really was like, how did they once juggle all of this in a way that didn't feel...
They didn't, it was Jim's movie.
Exhausting. Everybody else had a little bit of an arc. I mean, they still did.
It was Jim's, and it was also Chris Klein... And Mina Suvari's character, because
even the
other
Rookie of the Year
Finch
had
was
a little
arc. small thing.
Yes, well, he learns to shit in public, but like even Rookie of the Year had a little bit of an arc where he's the guy who's like, "This is everything's going to be perfect, everything's going to be special," and he learns, "No, it isn't."
But he's a foil for the other characters, if nothing else. He sets up the premise, and he's kind of like the utilitarian like narrator to some extent. I think
I still feel like his little storyline in the first movie, I think, is realistic to the high school experience, you know what I mean?
Like, I agree.
This belief, you're in this bubble, and his bubble is bursting. So, American Reunion, and that's the first thing I want to talk about.
I also like that in the original one, you get to see Tara Reid, who at the time was a young, kind of cute actress that, like, oh, I hope she doesn't turn into Breckenmeyer impersonating Lindsay Lohan.
She's like, hey, guys.
And you might have seen, I think, maybe a little bit of her.
Oh,
nipple.
There you are.
A little bit of her nipple.
I'm going to sit on the bed while you talk on the phone.
A little bit of her nipple.
In the scene. Did you see my nipple?
In where she's doing LA DJ.
Oh, LA DJ. That's where I want to start with American Reunion, because it's a terrible movie. I won't say it's the worst thing I've seen this year, because I still think Wrath of the Titans is worse.
No, it can't be the worst also, because there was probably, and I'm being honest, I'm not being generous, I think maybe 5 or 6 times where I had a genuine, like, laugh out loud moment.
Most courtesy of Sean William Scott, who I still don't think was very good in the movie.
No.
I've seen him be really good in stuff, and so it's very weird to see him take many steps back in this.
I don't even think he took steps back. I think he didn't, not progress as a character, but I think that that's the same performance he gave in the very first movie.
In the first one, to me, and I'm sure I talked about this on the original podcast, in the first American Pie, Sean William Scott, to me, felt like like a Jason Mewes in the original Clerks. Like, they didn't find an actor. They found that guy.
I get that. Yeah, so maybe he's
and
the same.
And now he always feels like he's pretending to be that guy.
He's the same maybe as he was in American Pie 2.
Yeah, definitely.
And but I think that, like, there's some scenes, like, where he's introduced and he's like, hey, fuckers, hey, suck my cock! And it's like, I get the feeling he doesn't even want to say it. But, like, well, you have to establish that
right.
as him.
Right.
Because the funnier gut moments of him making, like, genuine, like, genuinely reacting to stuff, you know, it works.
Right. The movie was so depressing to me. At the end of the movie, and this isn't a spoiler, during the credits, they show pictures from the original movie. They show pictures of the cast.
They show pictures from all the movies.
Yeah.
That the main cast was in, not the
And it was super
cast.
Depressing. It really encapsulated what was depressing about the whole movie, because as I'm watching it, I just was sad. For the fact that, yeah, you go back to 1999 and you watch American Pie and you think maybe this is going to be not, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High necessarily, but like you think that each of these people are going to go on to have a career. And for a couple of years, they all did. Chris Klein showed up in stuff.
For
and
a couple
of
years. But
Tara Reid showed up in stuff and Big Show. And most of it was put out by like Miramax because they were doing the teen movies all the time.
Right. By the way, I can only name like, I think one Jason Biggs. No, he was in Loser.
Yes.
And he was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Boys and Girls.
Never saw
Freddie
that.
Freddie Prinze. You saw that shit in the theater with me.
I don't know if you heard the first thing I said, but never saw it.
Yeah, I totally
saw that. It takes place in San Francisco, I think, right?
I don't know. Claire Forlani is in it, and Freddie Prinze Jr.
Is he the fashion designer? Is that the one?
That might be right.
Biggs is in
Jersey Girl. Biggs is in... No, you're thinking of Head Over Heels.
Which I also saw in the theater opening
Biggs
night.
Is in a Woody Allen movie. He's in anything else.
The worst Woody Allen movie?
Possibly. He at least has sort of had a consistent career since American Pie, because...
I would not call that consistent, but I think that
he's done stuff. He had a TV show. I mean, it didn't last very long, but whatever.
Chris Klein peaked and then just disappeared.
Because apparently he spent the intervening years with a monster cocaine addiction. If he's not strung out of his mind on cocaine in this movie, I don't know what addiction looks like.
By the way, like, we do not know if
Absolutely
Chris Klein
not.
is
Absolutely
on cocaine
not.
Or not. But all evidence, if you've never seen the YouTube, there's, do a YouTube search
for... We talked about this on a really old podcast.
Street Fighter...
Oh, that one.
The Legend of Chun-Li.
But I was talking about the Mamma Mia audition.
No. I'm talking about Street Fighter. Someone had put together, not all of Chris Klein's, who plays like...
Nash.
Detective Nash in the Street Fighter movie, where they put it with music. The only downside is the music is too loud. You can't really hear his lines. But every face he makes, every line of dialogue is like, you're on cocaine. At least that's what I think.
Same with his Mamma Mia audition,
oh, yeah.
which is floating around there somewhere. And again, you go back to American Pie, which came out the same year as Election, and he was so, like, sweet in both of those movies. And his character in the original American Pie just completely wins you over, because he's this jock who's a big lacrosse star at his high school, super popular, kind of gets a crush on, like, a nerdy girl and wants to, like, do the right thing and really likes her and opens up to her and gets to, like, show another side of himself. It's not necessarily rewriting, you know... The wheel.
Rewriting the wheel. I like that.
But his character is so likable in that movie. And then in this, he's like this weird.
They did something
rapist.
Right, though, by making him an LA personality.
Yes.
Like, it kind of explains, it kind of goes one step towards explaining why he is a dyed-haired...
Right, with like he has, like, plugs.
It's so weird. Like, he must have been losing his hair.
Weirdly tanned, his teeth, he has these huge caps, and his upper lip is disappeared.
There's a vein in his temple that's, like, throbbing the entire time. It's distracting.
He kind of whispers every line, like... I mean, he's... It's fucked up. It's so sad.
It's really weird, yeah.
No one is any good. It's so bizarre, because you see American Pie, and...
I think Jason Biggs isn't the worst.
He's fine. But, like, for some reason, you cut their performances... slack in 99, I guess maybe because they're kids.
Yeah.
And now they're adults and you're like, oh, you have not improved.
No, but going back to what you said, like they were better actors back then. They weren't on cocaine. They were more sincere. They were giving they were trying. And I think now that they think of themselves as actors, like we're elder statesmen or we've done this before, so I'm going to go in there. But I would say for Rookie of the Year, he is not grounded. I think he's the worst actor, but...
I think
he follows us on Twitter.
Oh, we're sorry. We love you. great beard. Hey, listen, he was in Please Give, so that's he was maybe.
Who is he in Please Give?
He's the girl that Rebecca, the guy that Rebecca Hall kind of starts seeing.
Oh man, I vaguely remember him.
They go look at the leaves and the.
Yeah. Okay, upstate New York or whatever.
Yeah. The whole endeavor just feels kind of desperate and sad, like, because you're sitting there thinking, boy, none of these people really went on to much. They sort of had
careers
in the early 2000s, and then it dried up, and now they're going back to the well that they don't need to go to. The movie has no, I mean, it doesn't even attempt to justify its own existence. They're attending their 13-year reunion, which is not a thing, and then they say, like, well, we couldn't get it together for the 10th, and, like, I don't think they're even trying to make a joke out of that. I don't think they're making a joke of, like, we know how stupid it is to have a 13th reunion.
Right.
I think they're trying to explain something away, and it's laughable.
It's like the end of, or what's that movie where, Old School.
Oh my God.
Where it's like the,
Let's just say I caught him red-handed, and it wasn't
pretty. And who is that? That's Craig Kilborn? No, it's Craig Kilborn.
Yeah.
Who plays the jerky, douchey, slimy boyfriend of... The Renee Zellweger lookalike, or whatever her name is.
Meredith Grey. Her name. Ellen Pompeo.
Pompeo. And he is gone, conveniently at the end, so she can hook up with Luke Wilson. And it's like, well, where's your boyfriend? And she says, and I quote, let's just say I caught him red-handed and it wasn't pretty. And that's what...
literally the end of that.
A screenwriter, that out. Make a type, like, insert a typing sound right here, like, on a typewriter. And, like, said, that's explained. Right, the movie's done. Over. Sorry, that's my
old school. No, that's okay. There's so much of that in this movie, though, where it's, like, characters say things that should be, not even necessarily subtext, but, like, we could maybe infer. The first time that Jason Biggs... His big arc in this movie is he's not having enough sex with his wife, and oh, we're back to the first movie because he's just not getting laid. And again, it's one of these fucking movies that's so insulting because it says that as soon as you get married and have a kid, like, the sex dries up because that's adulthood. His next door neighbor.
This is just Patrick's way of bragging that he gets laid all the time.
So Doug is giving me a hand job right now.
Whoa, dude! you don't need to know that.
His next door neighbor is this teenage girl who is grown up into, like, a fox now. He used to babysit her. And their first conversation, like, we kind of get that, but they both, like, have to come out and say it in these clumsily written lines of dialogue.
Yeah, there's even a scene, like, in that very scene, she comes out and she goes, oh my God, Jim? And I'm thinking, if you're Jim, well, just put the logic here.
Right.
Like, you're walking into your dad's house. The neighbor, a girl walks out of the neighbor's house and it's like, I'm sorry, who are you? Like, just assume it's your neighbor, you fuckhead. And then assume maybe it's a girl that's, like, about 18, so the last time you saw her was maybe 8 years ago or 10 years ago. Like,
they have to,
13 years ago.
They have to work in just all this awkward dialogue to, like, explain what the characters have been doing.
It's just horribly written.
Thomas Ian Nicholas's whole thing is, like, he's a housewife. He watches lame shows, TiVo'd with his wife, and he cooks and wears an apron at home, and he's a pussy now. Meanwhile, they're like, oh, he's our favorite housewife, ha ha ha. Meanwhile, it's revealed two-thirds of the way into the movie, and this is not a spoiler, he's an architect who works from home. He's not
By the way, I totally went over my head, because I'm just like,
but it's like this weird thrown-away line where it's like, so what was all this stuff about him being, like, this pussy-whipped house husband?
Right, and by the way...
apparently a very successful career!
And he's also...
a loving relationship where they do things they like to do together, like watch... Real Housewives.
And that's the thing, it's like, okay, you can judge the choice of programming you choose to watch, but, like, he and his wife are madly in love. He's, like, he never even vacillates from that. Everything seems to be working out really well for him.
And yet, the movie, I will give it a little bit of credit, in some of the different storylines, it hits on something that, like, okay, that may be the start of an idea. And the whole thing with him is, as soon as he sees... Breckenmeyer voicing Lindsay Lohan again, he sort of falls back into that weird place when he was 17, and it's not like he is still in love with her or wants to have sex with her or whatever, but it's like, oh, you were my first love, and these feelings come back up. And I think...
There's definitely some
legitimacy to that, and I wish that the movie had explored some of the ideas that it barely introduced.
No, in fact, they only kind of, like, they really... hit upon that, like, on the nose at the very end, and this isn't a spoiler, but he kind of has a conversation with Vicky, played by the reflection in a car door known as Tara Reid.
Played by a large, tanned salamander.
Right. And he basically tries to explain, like, you'll always be my first love. Like, right. I love my wife.
Right.
Like, I have affection towards you or right. for our history.
Right.
And I actually think that's a really sweet thing that, again, could be explored, but it's right. not. It's back to the dialogue thing really fast, too. It's not just, like, how they telegraph everything. It's that, like, when... And the other movies do this a lot. Because there are a lot of characters, they all have to, like, especially the second movie, they, like, walk into frame.
There's a lot of that in this,
too. There's a lot of that in this. And every time they walk in, it's like, hey, Kev. Hey, Jim. How are you? And there's a
I'll
lot.
I'll be right back.
And I leaned over to you during the movie, and I said this to you. I said, there was probably four or five different scenes throughout the movie where two people enter a scene. One person walks over and says, hey, we need to talk. And he goes, honey, wait right here. I'll be right back. I swear to God, it's like, what the, yeah. who the, and then yeah. there's scenes, another little quirk that I noticed was scenes, more than one, starts with, like, two people having a conversation in a coffee shop, and the person starts a scene by saying, so, you, like, what, yeah. just, we can join in the middle of a conversation, we'll fill in the holes.
And it's very,
and I'm shouting again, sorry.
It's okay, it's very bizarre, because that is a problem throughout the entire series, and yet this wasn't written or directed by guys who've been affiliated with the series in the past, so, like, by accident, they got that part of it right.
Yeah, right.
Or they're brilliant mimics, you know what I mean? But right. I don't think they are. Because here's the weird thing about American Reunion. It's like the shittiest piece of, like, American Pie fan fiction. It's this crazy, like, these guys who did the Harold and Kumar movies and apparently loved the original American Pie. It's like, we're going to do one of those. And it
that's who they are? Is that why Neil Patrick Harris is in it and stuff?
And it has no reason for being, but, like, there are so many pathetic callbacks to, like, especially the first movie. But then every once in a while there's a weird, like, Chris Klein says, like, I missed your wedding, I'm not gonna miss this. Get it? Chris Klein wasn't in American Wedding.
Well, because that's when his career was at its
he
top,
was doing Rollerball, right. Yeah. So, like, the very first scene, it's like, it's Jason Biggs pouring lube into a sock and getting ready to masturbate, and he says something to the effect of, like, something about this time, and it's like, oh, is he really referencing the time when he did that in 1999? Like, his memory is that specific, right. That, right, like, right. Here we go again. It's so... And again, the audience that we saw it with, all that worked, because as soon as we saw him pouring lube into the sock, they were all like, remember that.
I don't want to correct, I don't know
no,
if
it's fine.
Worthy of correction, but I actually was nervous, and that's such a weird word to use in this context, but I was nervous because the theater was not full at all. It was maybe half full. I'm an optimist. It was half full with a lot of different types of people. In fact, I was so pissed off because when we walked in the theater... It was the same time this, like, cabal of douches also walked in the theater. These, 21... Well, I don't even know how old they were.
I'm guessing they were not 21.
They were late teenager, meathead, you know, no sleeveless t-shirt, you know, whatever. I can't even describe it. You know what I'm talking about. And they all walk
just
in.
Just picture
and
me.
And they're being so fucking loud. And they're just... Everything's about them. And it's really... I'm like, great. They're going to be, like, ruining my... who fucking cares about my experience of America?
Still.
But still... And they actually got kicked out. Quick side note, they got ushers came in and asked them to leave. I'm not sure why, if they didn't have tickets or if they were underage or if they were drinking, which is, I saw the ushers with bottles of something, but I don't know.
Thank goodness.
But I was nervous, again, not the right word, because I thought that the audience would just be guffawing at all the shittiest stuff.
Right.
And actually, surprisingly, it was a pretty quiet audience. Like, they weren't really laughing. The stuff you and I were laughing at, and not to say we're better or whatever than the other...
It's always different stuff.
It's always different stuff.
Yeah.
And they were laughing at a couple of the moments where you're supposed to laugh.
Sure.
But it wasn't a...
But, like, they're reacting to,
gut
like...
busting.
Stifler being covered in, like, pubes on his face. And I won't get into how that happens, but, like...
Or the guy reaching into a cooler and pulling his shit-covered hand out.
Exactly. And it's like...
And I won't get into how shit got in a cooler.
Like, you guys, these things aren't funny. And the two, the writers and directors... John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg do not trust their own material in the slightest because there's a scene like where Biggs and Allison Hannigan are supposed to have sex, but of course they can't because they're married with a kid. he falls asleep. She walks in. He's already asleep. She's disappointed because now we're not going to fuck. And it's like they can't just leave that moment alone. They add a fart sound effect. Like, so they're snoring because, of course, he's fallen asleep. He has to snore. Right. And then, just to really add insult, they have him fart in his sleep. And it's like they're so afraid that you might not laugh or just be in this moment, even if it's not a good moment. It's like they don't trust this moment, so they add in a fart sound effect.
Yeah, no, it's... And really quickly, I want to talk about some good things, too.
Sure.
I'm reaching...
What are they? Okay.
I think that Jason Biggs' character, or Jason Biggs' performance yes. is fine.
Fine, absolutely.
It's absolutely fine. I think that he actually... it's such a weird... I was watching him during the movie, and I was thinking about this a lot.
He's as good as he's ever been.
But it's funny, though, because it's like...
Which is always the
same. I don't
know,
like, why is he not more famous? Why is he not utilized more often?
Because he's bland.
He is absolutely bland. But, you know, again, just thinking about, like, why is it that he... Like, I like him in this, fine. And but there's so many... my point is that there's just so many other actors that are just fine or whatever. Is it because he's kind of, like, he's a little odd-looking? And sure. That's not to... I'm not... I don't know. I'm odd-looking, too, you know? So, but it's just like, well, he's not conventionally attractive, like a leading man type thing.
Right.
But he's fine. And actually, his performance was the best. It seems like he's a real person, as opposed to the other cartoon characters like Kevin... played by L.A. DJ, who cannot act. I don't know how he floated it over home plate in Wrigley Field. Chris Klein's a coke addict. Maybe not.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, were these all just, like, reasonably talented, like, teen actors who now, as adults, just can't cut it? I don't know.
Finch was okay.
He's fine. I mean,
but
he's
also
fine.
Just, like, it's such a... It's also, like, weirdly bland for as exotic as this character kind of is. It's like he's...
Well, the whole idea with him is to, you know, take away all his mystery. And then they add these new characters, because there's not enough characters in the movie. I'm sorry, real quick, I just had a thought. You know who might get more laughs than Sean William Scott is John Cho, who gets a laugh almost every time he's on screen.
John Cho is maybe the funniest. Well,
he's overused
in
the movie.
I would say bang for your buck John Cho, like in terms of like he delivers every time he's on screen.
Yeah, but he's overused, I think.
Sean William Scott has some funny, maybe some funnier laughs, but is like, it's only 2% of his performance is genuinely funny.
Right.
John Cho, well, we'll get to that later about spoilers at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought Jason Biggs was okay. I thought Eugene Levy was better than he had been, because he's shameless. He'll appear in every American Pie in, you know, Offshoot and Bandcamp and whatever else.
Beta House and Naked Mile.
And he was decent. I didn't mind his little subplot with Stifler's mom. I didn't mind that.
I didn't either, but I want to get to that in a second.
And I'm trying to think what else. I thought, what's her name, Mina Suvari?
Yeah.
She was fine.
But again, the only thing that, because this movie is absolutely just trading on your nostalgia, and that's not a new thing, but I feel like in movies recently, that's been coming up a lot, whether it's like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, or even the Muppets, or now they've announced that, like, we're going to do another Dumb and Dumber. Like, that movie's 20 years old, and it doesn't need a sequel, but they just want to trade...
Total Recall,
where they need to trade on your nostalgia for this thing that you like. And that's all that American Reunion has going for it, because it's not a particularly funny movie. It has nothing really to offer the world, except for a chance to spend time with these people that you enjoyed spending time with in 1999. And the problem with Mina Suvari, or... her storyline, or what all of her scenes with Chris Klein, is that all it does, by design, is conjure up memories of the much better version that they themselves did 13 years ago. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's a scene where they're talking at a dance, and I recognized it right away. I'm not proud to say. A song comes on at the reunion, and it's the song that plays on the score of the original American Pie, sort of at the end sequence at the end of the party when everybody has like slept together and it's the morning after song.
Yeah. It's Oz and her on the dock.
Right. And that's a shot that always sticks with me.
It's probably the sweetest shot in the first movie. And it's a very tender moment of two people that there's no dialogue.
Right.
The directors trusted their audience to figure everything out.
And that's why the song sticks out, because the song is always married There it is. That song is always sort of married to that shot in my head. And they play it, and it's only there to remind you, like, remember the first movie? Like, yeah, I do, and it was way better.
Yeah.
Way better. Anything else that you want to say that was good about it before we move into spoilers?
You know, no.
By the way,
I'm really thinking,
are the audience for this movie.
Absolutely.
This is what we probably should have led with, because here's how you know that they fucked up. Like, we are fans of the original American Pie. We rip on it. It's kind of bad, but, like, we have tremendous affection for it.
We quote it, right, yeah.
And, you know, it's a movie about, like, sort of growing up beyond that. And it's like, yeah, we are older now. We are more into our adult life. So,
well, that was what you kind of got to before, in terms of, like, in 99, we were out of high school, but we can kind of connect with that because it wasn't so many years prior that we were in high school. At this point, like, yes, you're married with a kid. I'm married, you know, it's like...
So in some ways, we have grown up at the same time as these characters. So we are the audience for this movie. So it's not like, hey, let's go see this piece of shit and make fun of it. Like,
no, we're not watching it ironically at all.
No, we wanted to see it.
And even some of the things, I was hoping, like, I like to watch movies that explore maybe some feelings I have about, like, growing older.
Yes.
Because, again, I don't consider myself old whatsoever, but I like to watch stuff that's, like, a character that's grappling with, he's married, and what's the next step, or, you know, like, what a kid might do, or, like, even looking back, if I ever, like, go back and see an ex-girlfriend or an old friend that I haven't talked to since high school, like, it will definitely bring up those feelings, like we talked earlier about the Vicky, you know, Kevin and Vicky storyline. Yeah. So it's disappointing because I was hoping for that. And it's just like, no, they'd rather just talk about the present, which is horrible and not, you know.
There's a movie that I was thinking of a lot during American Reunion, and it's a movie that you're not a fan of, but it kind of does the same thing where it takes a movie and about 12 years later, there's a sequel that's unnecessary and it deals with a lot of these same themes and is also terrible in a lot of ways. And that movie is Clerks 2. And there's a lot of stuff that's terrible in Clerks 2, but the stuff that Clerks 2 does right is the stuff that American Reunion should have been doing also, what it has to say about growing up and sort of realizing that, like, my life isn't what I thought it was going to be, so now I need to figure out
what it is.
Right, and, like, make a new dream for myself, sort of, you know? And I think Clerks 2 does that really well. Take away, you know...
The donkey show,
basically. A lot of the bad stuff in Clerks 2... when you take away most of the comedy, what's left, I think, is really valuable.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the movie where they make a porno?
I wish. It's the movie where they cop out. I just wish that American Reunion, I wish when these guys sat down to write that would have been the goal that they had in mind. Like, let's say some things about life and about growing older, but let's do it through the prism of these characters and this universe.
Yeah.
And we can add our stupid jokes and whatever, but, like, start with having something to say.
Anything they say that even kind of touches upon that, and there isn't much, is taken from a cliche handbook.
Right.
Where it's like, hey, man, growing, like, at one point, Stifler, this is a minor spoiler, but Stifler admits to his friends that he's not an executive at this big firm. And he says, so what, man? And then Finch also says, I'm not this world traveler. This is a bigger spoiler. So I guess let's move out of the spoilers right now.
Spoilers for American Reunion. If you haven't seen it yet, I would almost say don't. But if you intend to see it, go ahead and tune out and come back after you've seen it. Otherwise, go ahead and listen to the end of the show. Warning over. Commence spoilers.
So Finch...
Everyone is a ghost.
Everyone.
It's an American Reunion of ghosts.
Finch, he sets his character up in such a way where he's traveled the world. He was in Beijing and moved to Dubai and lived with the tribes in Africa and motorcycled through South America. And it turns out it was all a lie. He is assistant manager to a Staples in New Jersey. I cannot believe I remember this, by the way. And there's a scene where his buddies are trying to console him, like, it's not that bad. And it's, again, the sweetness, the genuineness of the scene is okay. Like, it's not, you can have a regular job.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
By the way, the person telling him that is the guy that's on TV, the Chris Ostreicher. Is his name Chris in the movie?
Yeah.
So Chris Klein his name is Chris in...
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. Who is also the most famous, wealthy, the hottest girlfriend in theory, the perfect life in theory. Obviously, it's not perfect. Otherwise, he wouldn't be pining for a troll by the name of Mina Suvari. But it's like, okay, so you're saying you don't have to be the manager of this big firm. It's okay that you're, or the, you know, whatever. You don't have to travel the world. You could just have a job.
Right.
But it's so like, oh, okay, that's how you're going to resolve that by, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And
I'm talking to them, Patrick.
And there's this weird, like, kind of lip service that's paid to this idea of, like, you guys, we should talk more. We don't get together enough. And you would think that, like, there's an opportunity for them to say, like, boy, if we stayed in contact better, if we had remained better friends, we would know this about you. Because the fact that they act like they're these great friends, but nobody knows anything about the other guy.
Well, there's, like, even a scene where they said, like, let's get the whole group back together. I believe it's Kevin talking to Jim.
Okay.
And he says, well, what, Chris is in Los Angeles, and I don't even think Finch's mom knows where he is.
Because we have to introduce the idea that Finch has a mom. And honestly, it was jarring to me at the time, because I was like, what's with the weird reference to Finch's mom? Not thinking ahead to the fact that they have to pay this off by having Rebecca De Mornay show up.
Is that Rebecca De Mornay?
Yeah. As Finch.
That was not Rebecca. Was that really?
Yeah.
At one point I said that looks like Rebecca De Mornay.
Really?
I swear to God.
Did you say it out loud?
I said it half. I think I flubbed her last name, so I ate my words as I was saying it to you.
Yeah, but that was her.
Because that girl looks okay, but going back to our last week's podcast, she is a bird. Moving on.
That was Rosanna Arquette that we were talking about.
Same person. Ioni Sky, Daphne Zuniga, worlds.
So she shows up so that Sean William Scott can have sex with her, and we pay off this moment from the first movie. And again, this is back to the idea of, like, these two guys sat down and wrote this weird masturbatory American Pie fan fiction to the point where people show up for cameos just for the sake of, like, and so-and-so's back, and so-and-so's back. As Doug alluded to, Natasha Lyonne shows up for one scene, and it's like, great, she's alive and not in a drug coma.
Yeah.
And she's a lesbian now, and then the next thing out of her mouth is, like, a guy she hasn't seen in 13 years. She's like, you should really go talk to Vicky. She's upset. And it's like, how do they fall right back into being in high school?
Right.
And that's not what the movie's trying. The movie's not a commentary on that. It's literally trying to make this moment work. The worst of the cameos, even worse than Chris Owen reprising his role as the Shermanator.
Yeah, that just seemed... It's almost admirable how everyone came back. And I mean that, like, obviously everyone in the cast, like, needs work.
That's the thing.
But it is like, okay, we got literally every person...
But it's sad. Last summer, I saw the trailer for Fast Five. And I'm not even a huge fucking Fast and Furious fan at the time. I was not. But there was part of me that was, like, excited that they got everyone. And then I saw the movie, and it was like, yeah, they made good use of everyone. This all makes sense. This movie, I'm constantly just reminded of, like, well, of course they fucking showed up. This is the biggest thing they're going to do for the rest of their lives.
I get it. I just think their people's pride would get in the way of saying, you know what, right. I'm not a big actor anymore, but I don't need to do an American
Especially when
movie
it's just
movie.
One scene. I don't understand, like...
Right.
And thank God they didn't try and, like, juggle a plot for Natasha Lyonne. And the worst cameo that shows up is Shannon Elizabeth in this bizarre moment where, like, Biggs and Allison Hannigan are fucking.
I mean, like, literally, they're in the band room of the high school during
knocking
the reunion.
Instruments over.
They are fucking. His cock ostensibly is in her vagine.
Right.
And
all of a sudden, Shannon Elizabeth is standing next to them like, oh, Gene? Hello! And there's a weird guy standing next to her the whole time that's never really called attention to, and it's a joke at the end, like, she's with him and he looks like Jason Biggs and ha ha ha.
Right, but still, it's like...
It's this bizarre scene that's just like, oh, we almost forgot to put Shannon Elizabeth in here, so let's jam her in.
I do like your dirty magazines!
And, I mean, she has not improved as an actress. She looks disturbing.
No. Don't, I mean, you can't, I understand your hatred for Shannon Elizabeth, but, like, not improves an actress. She has, like, three lines, and it's a shitty piece of dialogue.
Listen,
it's a scene.
It's been 13 years. She could have studied a fucking accent. In 13 years, she could have been like, you know what? I'm going to try and get this right.
I disagree. If I'm Shannon Elizabeth, I'm not studying a fucking accent for the American reunion movie. I'm like, I did this accent.
This is the first time she's been on a movie screen in 8 years.
I was thinking to myself, when I was early 20s, I got naked in this movie. I did a shitty accent. I'm getting paid probably a couple $100,000 to appear. The piece of paper I have in front of my hand is a piece of garbage. Like, I'm going to show up there and, like, phone
it in. It's just bizarre. There's this weird fan service. And the one moment where it sort of pays off is the John Cho arc,
There was another scene, just while we're on the point of Shannon Elizabeth walking into two people fucking. There was another scene where two people were like, I forgot the scene, where they're like about to have sex, and a person walks in and starts talking, and it's like, this would never happen. Yeah. I'm sorry, it's just a lot of, like, things that are so, like, square pegs, round holes, right, like, we have to fit this in here. John Cho, is really, really funny.
Yeah, and he has this arc where somebody says, like, where's the other MILF guy?
Which is,
and,
like, I think it's a funny joke. It's actually Oz. It's Chris Klein's character that says, where's the other MILF guy? And that's a really funny, like, tongue-in-cheek, you know, self-referential thing.
Right. But then they kind of overplay it. I mean, it's a funny scene when those two are reunited because it's like, ha, 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 they got that actor.
Even
but
first
then all they do is say MILF over and over, and it's like, yeah, we get it. You're the movie that invented that, but, like, that's not enough to sustain this as being funny. You know what I mean?
Yes and no. I think even when he first shows up, Jason Biggs is in a car with the naked... By the way, it kind of, evolves where his next-door neighbor...
We need to talk about that...
Well, we can talk that next. So, Cho pulls up, and he's just like, hey! Like, are you okay? He's acting, he's just being funny.
Yeah.
And it works. And he's like doing a performance, and it just is admirable. Yeah. And then, throughout the rest of it, and you think he's a little overused, I'm just desperate. I'm like a fish out of water. Like, I need that oxygen.
Right.
Wait, fish? Right. Yeah, fish need oxygen. Whatever.
Like a fish needs a bicycle.
Yes.
A fish needs oxygen like a bicycle. An oxygen bicycle.
So, Jim's neighbor is the chick, the high school chick who just turned 18.
Right. Which is important that we point that out.
So she can drink what? I don't know.
No, so it's not against the law when she's naked in his lap.
Well, I thought it was 17 in Illinois.
They're in Michigan.
Fuck. Damn you, Michigan. she has a big crush on Jim because...
Based on nothing. Like, you're a really good guy. You don't know shit about me. I was your babysitter.
And you can maybe argue like, yeah, she's 18. She's a dummy. She doesn't know shit about anything. But at the same time...
Oh, I gotta talk about that too.
She basically throws herself at Jim. She removes her top. And what I have to say, not to talk too much about nudity, but it's always...
It's a pleasant the American Pie series.
It's a pleasant surprise when a character who you don't expect to get naked gets naked. And I mean that in the least misogynistic way possible, it's impossible to telegraph that to you right
now. Even to some extent, the first American Pie introduces a character specifically to get naked. And that's fine because the foreign exchange student in every teen comedy is the one who gets naked. But in the subsequent sequels, you kind of always knew they would trot out these characters. Like, you're the ones who are going to take off your tops.
Yeah, like in the second movie, it's two ugly old actresses and their gross boobs.
In the third movie, it's strippers, you know? It's
right, like, as Playboy models, it's like, no, we've seen you naked already. Right. I don't want to see you naked. And this movie, it's
this
a girl.
Is what I call diegetic nudity.
Yeah. This girl, though, gets naked, and it's pretty great. If you're a dude, if you're Sir DeLillo, don't listen right now.
But here's the thing, ladies. Don't think that it's just the female nudity that American Pie is selling. Because
you got the cock and the balls.
In a very interesting scene, and I mean, I have to give Jason Biggs some credit for going full Spano. It's a terrible scene where, like, he's naked, you don't understand why, they're showing way too much of his butt. He covers up with, like, a glass lid, and she says, you know, that's see-through, right? And they do a cutaway to, like, just the cock behind this glass thing. And whatever, that's fine. Then they cut back to a wider shot of, like, Biggs and his cock in the same shot. And you're like, that's really Biggs' cock. So, good for him, I guess.
It was circumcised, so, you know, it goes back to his Hebrew school.
God, there's so many things I want to mention because...
I want to talk really quick about Allison Hannigan's face.
Okay.
I've never been a fan of hers. Okay. I think she is weird looking. She's an elf.
Sure.
And I know that's like part of her charm to a lot of people, that she has pointy ears and she lives in a hole in a tree. Her face, I've never taken any hallucinogenic drug.
Yeah.
If I took a shroom right now, and you know like how everything is moving?
Yeah.
Every part of her face is like a swirling...
Yeah, well, she's acting up a storm.
Her face deserves a face Oscar.
I will give her some credit, though.
Actually, not an Oscar. A Razzie. A Frazzy. A face Razzie for too much face acting.
I will give her some credit, though, because, again, she was a character that I sort of liked in the first two movies, and by American Wedding... the character was completely gone and was just replaced with Allison Hannigan. Like, she just was playing herself.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was some attempt...
If that's herself, I don't like Allison
Hannigan. ...to go back to the vocal affect and some of the mannerisms of, like, the weird band girl in the first movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, she sort of tried to do something. I'm not saying it works, because, again, their storyline is garbage. So many things I need to talk about. One, there's a little bit of, like, commentary that takes place in one scene where they're at a beach party, and they're looking around, and all of the girls who are supposed to be in high school but are clearly, like, spring break bikini models and stuff.
It's not like MTV high school students, right?
And they're like just drinking and dancing, and they're dressed so slutty, and they're kissing.
They wear like thongs,
and they're kissing each other. And there's a somebody makes a comment like, "Hey, girls now are way sluttier, right?" And that's the end of it. And I'm like, "No, no, no! Pursue that again. You guys are relics out of time now." Pursue that. You're out of place at this high school party. The movie that does that really great is currently playing in theaters, 21 Jump Street. There's a lot of that. There's a scene where they first show up to the high school and they're trying to figure out who the cliques are, and it very quickly breaks down. It's like, there's the goth guys. Okay, those are the nerds. I'm not sure who those people are. What the fuck are they? And it's like those Harajuku, like, Asian girls. Like, what the fuck are they? And it's a great scene, and there's a lot of that in 21 Jump Street where it's like, there's another scene, too, where Stifler's trying to cover for something, and he's like, "Hey, our car broke down. Can we use your phone?" And the dad says, "Don't you have a cell phone?" And it's kind of funny, because it's like, hey, we haven't seen these guys since 99. Cell phones were not all over the place.
Yeah.
But then somebody has to fucking come out and say, well,
right.
Like,
don't trust the audience.
They don't at all. Okay, so that's, I had to talk about Biggs's penis. I had to talk about that stupid thing. Next. The fucking
scene. You're all riled up.
Oh, this movie. The scene where...
by the way, I didn't think it was as horrible as I now do. Like, when I left it, I'm like, man, that was disappointing.
My head was spinning because it was like, I have to be able to talk as the movie is going. Like, we need to maybe do a commentary for it or something because, like, there's so much that's so frustratingly bad in this movie.
When every person says anything, it's laughable. And right. You and I, at points, were, like, giggling to ourselves because it's like, this is fucking ridiculous.
I
want to
pull my hair out and never stop punching the screen. There's a scene after the credits where we cut to Eugene Levy and Stifler's mom, who are now sort of a couple. They had to go as far as killing Jim's mom in order to make that little bit of fucking fan service happen.
In this movie, or did it happen in a previous movie?
No, that was this movie.
Okay.
And again, it's just this fucking fan fiction. Like, wouldn't it be great if Jim's mom and Stifler's dad got together? Forget it. The other way around. Jim's dad and Stifler's mom got together, so they kill off Jim's mom.
Which is so funny, too, because I'm thinking they still had to hire that actress back for a flashback video.
And she's in the credits. And again, it's one of those things where they don't trust the audience. It's like, we understand that she's dead, but Jim has to say, like, it's been three years since she died.
No, since she passed.
Oh, right. Like, he knows. You could just say it's been 3 years. He knows the event you're referring to, but the audience might not. So let's say since she passed. So we get this moment of them sort of out on a date in a movie theater.
By the way, I just want to like talk about that for 1 second and talk about that in terms of a bigger picture. I think, and we've been accused of being nitpicky, however, I think with these fixes, the movie would not be a good movie, but it would not be infuriating.
Exactly. It would be American Pie.
It would be a fun
the original American Pie.
Where it just like gives you a little credit, and that's all we're asking for.
Right. So there's a scene after the credits where they're at the movies together, and he's very nervous, and he puts his arm around her, and she kind of leans into him. And I thought for sure it was going to, like, cut to black on that. And I was like, wow, neat. This little moment of two adults finding happiness. Very sweet, right?
I by the way, that scene, I knew as soon as it, like, opens on them in a theater, she's going to give him a blowjob.
I don't know why I thought. For some reason, it was, like, going to cut to black.
You're so
like,
sweet.
How nice that they give these two a little sweet moment. No, because, immediately, she starts to, like, have an orgasm because he put his arm around her and blows him in the theater loudly as he's moaning and the popcorn is flying up and down.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's the fart sound while Biggs is sleeping. It's like they do not trust the audience for 1 second to, like, not be laughing at something ridiculous.
Yeah,
and the audience was laughing very hard at that.
I think they've, again, it's not a revelation, but they've forgotten what made the first movie great, and they've just gone with, like, well, audiences want ridiculousness.
Right.
Audiences want the most absurd, at one point, Jim and his wife, what's her name in the movie?
Michelle.
They have to spice up their sex life, so at Stifler's party, she brings a bag of clothes that they're going to change into, and it's Dominatrix outfit, where she has a whip, in a black leather dress, and he's in, like, a gimp, just shorts and suspenders.
Bizarre.
With, like, a choker. And they have to, of course, like, run around the whole party, and there's a fight in the front yard, and the cops come, and it's just absurd. But it's like, I don't necessarily need, I guess, you always have to one-up yourself, but why even set that precedent? Like, let's not one-up ourselves, let's just make
bizarre.
A good fucking story.
And do we need to talk at all about the weird introduction of the Finch's girlfriend character, who's played by I think Dania Ramirez is her name. She used to be on Heroes, and she's in X-Men The Last Stand.
No.
A terrible character, a bad performance. She's in the movie just to give Finch a romantic counterpart, because that's what's been lacking all these years. And is it, like, because they knew they were going to marry off Jim's dad to Stifler's mom? And so, well, we can't leave Finch single. Again, it's this fucking idiot fan fiction. Okay, so in every American Pie, there's a long set piece, usually in the middle of the movie, in which Jason Biggs is humiliated. And apparently that's a staple of American Pie. And in the first movie, it's him making the sex, the video.
Yeah.
Stripping for, what's her name, Nadia, and being embarrassed. Which, by the way, gets referenced a lot in this movie. I saw the video on YouTube. Like, that was 13 years ago. Shit doesn't last 13 days anymore. So there's no way that a 13-year-old video
except is Keyboard Cat
in heavy rotation on YouTube. But again, we have to keep calling back to it. In the second movie, he glues his hand to his dick. I don't remember what the third movie is, but what the big embarrassing thing
I've only seen American Wedding once, I think.
And I have seen it twice.
You saw it on your wedding night.
Once in the theater and once the night before I got married.
Night before, not the wedding night.
I was in Target. I was getting married the next day, and I was in Target, and they had it for like $5. And I was like, I'm going to buy this and watch it by myself tonight, because my wife was sleeping at the hotel. We were in a huge fight. I'm just kidding. It was to get ready, everyone. We're very happy. In this movie, the long, humiliating sequence is Biggs driving home the babysitter, and she's drunk, and she takes off her clothes.
Stop you right now, because you're right. Yes. And that's the big sequence.
Yes.
But they've now taken where every scene that Jim is in has to be humiliating.
Sure, right, because
his dick in the pot at the party with the dominatrix outfit on. Like, everything is just absurd.
Right. But that, to me, that was like the long...
Yeah, that's the centerpiece, yeah.
Yeah. And here's the problem. Number one.
SS humiliation. The flagship, if you will.
Number one, I mean, if it's not 20 minutes long, I lost the ability to tell time. It went on forever, and I wanted to leave the theater for every minute of it.
No, there was two moments where it wasn't that bad.
It just goes on.
No, I'm being serious. One was the joke where her boobs are shown.
Right.
And number two, actually, some of Finch's reactions are pretty funny.
Yeah.
Where he's drinking tea, just like kind of watching everything go down.
It just goes on and on and on and on. But I had such an issue with it. Like, none of it was funny, first of all, because it's just like, how do I get this drunk girl inside? Which is not in and of itself funny. But there are implications behind what's going on that, to me, it's not about Jim being embarrassed. Like, it's about Jim maybe being arrested. It's about Jim losing his wife and child. Like, his whole life could get fucked up over the... And it made it very hard for me to laugh. And I don't think that's me just, like, being married and, like, putting myself in that situation. I really had a hard time finding any of it funny. In American Pie, it's like, he's embarrassed. He came on the internet. Ah.
Yeah.
In this, it...
Well, he even, like, literally says so when his friends show up to help him.
Yeah.
And he says, guys, I could be arrested.
He has to, like, lie to people, and it's just...
By the way, that never paid off, too, where John Cho shows up and sees the girl's head on his lap. She's passed out.
Right.
The high school girl is passed out in his lap. John Cho sees a head, and he's like, oh, it's your wife. Ah, wink, wink, see you later. And then at the reunion, he makes reference to it, and Jason Biggs is like, no, man, let's talk about something else. And they do, and it's dropped.
Well, because Allison Hannigan finds out, like, 2 minutes later, you know? And it's like... I don't know, the scene where, like, he somehow ends up outside of the bedroom in the weird dominatrix shit could have been the big embarrassing set piece and could have happened organically because it stems from their actual arc in the movie, their issue, which is, like, they're trying to spice up their sex life and look how it led to this embarrassment.
Right.
This shit with the babysitter, I have no idea what it's doing in the movie at all, except to get, like, a young girl to show her boobs. And then at the end of the movie...
Let me stop you right there. That's enough.
He says, like, oh, she doesn't mean anything to me, and we're supposed to give a shit that the babysitter's offended? And then at the end of the movie, they're all hanging out, and he sees her on the street. He's like, hang on, guys. I gotta go talk to her. Are we really supposed to fucking give a shit about her feelings? Does this little storyline need closure for anyone in the audience? Like... Fuck her. Fucking up his life. He does not go over there and, like, apologize to her.
It's the worst instincts of the writers and the directors.
God.
But even more so, that one scene is such a shitty scene where he walks over and says, like, hey, I'm sorry I said those things. And she's like, don't worry about it. I realize I was...
Yeah, no, she shows amazing maturity all of a sudden. Like, no, I was way out of line. I should be apologizing
and
to
just,
you.
It's like, wow, like, I'm glad this is all tied up in a neat little
bow. Did that need any resolution? Him saying, I don't give a shit about her, that's the end of that story, because that's the truth. Like,
Patrick, fuck.
It made me crazy, and I know it shouldn't, right? Because it's American Reunion, but... And then there's this. There's
well, I think it also
a dialogue where it's just like till the next time, and they try and leave it open. Yeah, for yeah, like yeah. What? What? Sequel?
No, you're pissed off, and rightly so. Not just because it's a disappointing movie, because again, it's not offensive. The movie is not going to like piss you off.
I will have forgotten about it by tomorrow.
Yeah, and there's again, I said there's probably 5 or 6 times where I genuinely had a laugh.
Yeah,
but you're pissed off because 2 reasons. I think 1 is it trades in on your affection for the first one, which all the movies do, so we should be used to that by now. And 2, it's somehow getting a quasi pass from people.
The things I read were mostly from like internet critics, and most of them said, like, if you're a fan of the series, you'll probably enjoy it, even though it's not that great.
Which is wrong.
I kind of call bullshit on that. Yeah, right. Like, it's a bad.
But by the way, that's such a fucking. I hate those kinds of. Because it's like, you didn't watch the movie, did you? You can say that and just like get.
I don't know. Apparently,
no one challenges that review.
Seeing these characters. And being reminded of better movies is supposed to be enough for me to, like, have an okay time, you know? But
yeah.
That's not the case. And I just feel like any movie should sort of justify its own existence. And because this movie has nothing to say, really, it doesn't justify its own reason for being. And I know there are people who will be like, the reason for being is to make money. The reason for being is to cash in on American Pie. The reason for being is for these actors to find work. I get it, okay, dummies? Like, I know that. I'm saying, as a screenwriter, when you're writing this, you should try and think of, like, why am I sitting down?
Yeah, why am I spending
months to write this? What story am I sitting down trying to tell?
Yeah.
And no one did that.
And honestly, like, a lot of times in a movie, I guess I do ask for a lot, and I'm not super discerning, but I definitely want to enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And I want to, I think part of the first movie, too, is, like, I liked the environment. I liked the high school, the houses, the comfort level of things. Even in the second movie, there's less of that, but there's still ideas where it's like they have rent this summer house. It's like it's a home. There's a homey feeling to it.
Yeah.
This movie has none of that. There's nothing. He goes back to his home, but it's depressing. They don't even like try to make it comfortable.
Right. And again, it's not even about coming home again, nor is it about coming home again to realize this isn't your home anymore. You know what I mean? Like
That would be an interesting movie.
And two things that the movie could have been about.
That's like
a
before sunrise, before sunset, approach to something that maybe we want. Like, doesn't have to be super depressing.
Right.
It just has to be mature and exploratory and say some things.
And you could still put pubes on Stifler's face if you have this other stuff. I'll overlook.
Right.
Pube face, you know? But,
Is there a thing, too, where Stifler's also kind of humiliated in, like, in the second movie, he's peed on?
Yeah, he drinks the jizz in the first movie.
So there's definitely, that's
American Wedding, he eats the poo.
So he eats jizz, gets pissed on, eats shit, and is covered in pubes.
Right. I don't know.
And I like Sean William Scott, actually, which is such a weird, like, he's one of the characters that's actually done something, and I liked, I mean, Role Models, he was great.
He's in Southland Tales. I mean, come on. He's in Bulletproof Monk. The guy is huge. Huge, I say. The Rundown. I'll keep going.
Yeah.
So anyway, fuck you, American Reunion.
Oh, Jesus.
Thanks a lot for disappointing me as we ramp up to what can only be a disappointing summer movie season of nothing but sequels and remakes. This was, I guess, the first, and it sucked. So good job. Good job, American Reunion.
Yeah.
Real quick, best worst. Go.
Brad Bird, best worst.
Best, I'm going to get crucified for this. I'm going to say Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, Ghost Protes, because I know people are going to be like, how could you not say Ratatouille? How could you not say The Incredibles? I had more fun with Ghost Protocol than any of those other movies. Worst, I feel bad. I just saw it for the first time. I got to say Iron Giant.
Fuck you.
Which one? I mean...
No, it's the same kind of Quentin Tarantino-esque where the guy has not made a bad movie.
Right.
Best, I have to say right now, is Ghost Protocol also because I just saw it most recently. It was my number one from last year.
Yes, it was.
I would say a close second would be The Incredibles, but I have not seen The Incredibles. I've actually seen Ratatouille a lot more than The Incredibles.
Okay.
And worst might be... nothing. The man's made no bad movies.
That's,
I know. The worst.
Cheating.
I don't want to say Iron Giant either. I'll say Ratatouille.
Ratatouille is his worst?
Iron Giant.
Ah.
It's the same Reservoir Dogs thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And by the way, I realized last week we did Quentin Tarantino, and I said his best is Jackie Brown. And I realized, wait a minute, one of my top five movies of all time.
I thought I mentioned that.
You reference Inglourious Basterds, but you don't kind of... You don't call me out as saying that Inglourious Basterds is in my top five movies of all time.
I just assumed you knew you were saying something really stupid.
I was saying something stupid. So Inglourious Basterds, it represents Quentin Tarantino.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Remember, you can always find us at fthismovie.blogspot.com and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Douglas, thank you. Take us out.
Oz? Fuckface?